There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential, and the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train. Search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
Gamertag Radio is on Play.it.
You can now watch Gamertag Radio live on Twitch.
Get all the latest news and coverage related to the gaming industry.
Join hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo.
Don't miss the crew record the podcast live Sundays, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesdays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get involved with the conversation, send us questions, and be part of the show.
Gamertag Radio.
Follow us, twitch.tv/GamertagRadio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen. Podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio. With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go. Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 697. This is your host, Danny, and joining me this week, the whole Gamertag Radio crew. We got Paris in the house. Paris, special, special episode, man.
Yeah, we're actually at PAX right now, 2017, recording this up here in Seattle. So we're all face-to-face recording, which it's starting to become a more common occurrence this year. We've been traveling and meeting up together a lot. So this is really cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. And also we have Pete in the house. Pete.
What's up? How you doing, guys?
You know, observation today, because we recorded some content earlier today. We'll talk about it in the future. But why every time I watch Pete record in person, it makes me laugh because Pete gets all serious. He grips the mic and goes, so blah, 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 blah.
I don't even want to know. I don't even think it's getting into character. It's just, you know, just getting into the conversation, right? Because like when we're at home, like we're just sitting there. Right?
Yeah,
just recording. But when we're here, like on location and stuff like that, like you want to get engaged with, you know, who you're talking with, whether it be you two yahoos or the people that we're talking to, you know, from wherever. You know, you want to make sure that they see that you're engaged in the conversation as well, as opposed to Paris right now, who's just looking at his phone.
But I'm still engaged.
So, Paris, I know we have a special recording for this episode. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so listening to this, the embargo for Destiny 2 should be up. So we're literally a day away from people being able to actually get hands-on with the final game. So I could start to talk more about Destiny 2 and just my overall impressions of everything I played and all that other good stuff. But what we're going to have on the podcast today is I got to sit in on a couple roundtable discussions with some folks from Bungie. So one was about the story, and I got to sit down with Jason Harris, who is the narrative director, and Matthew Ward, who is the cinematic director. And like I said, it was a roundtable discussion with other members of the media, and we're just talking about the story of Destiny 2, concepts, ideas, all that. Mm-hmm. But when you guys hear it, I actually come to it slightly late, so kind of I join it in progress. But I think I kind of took over the conversation, and I felt bad about it because I kind of dominated the conversation we're having with the other journalists. But it was fun. Minor spoilers in the conversation, so if you're wary about spoilers about Destiny 2, I'm just a heads up on that. I just kind of talk about some of the motivations of some of the characters that are in the game. But it was a fantastic conversation. I really enjoyed it. And as soon as I was done, I'm all texting Dan. I'm like, man, we got to play this on the show. This was great, you know, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then I also have another one with Jason Sussman, who is the world art lead, you know, for Destiny 2. And actually, if you go back to 2014, he's the person we interviewed right after the first time I ever played Destiny. That's who we interviewed right after we did that Devil's Lair strike. And that's the person we talked to. And it was so funny because I walked in, he immediately remembered me. He was like, I know you, you know, that was funny.
E3
2014. Mm-hmm. First time we played Destiny. So, that was another great conversation. And, you hear me disagree with someone from the media while we're talking, which I thought was kind of interesting too. But overall, there were two great conversations about Destiny 2. Like I said, just the art direction, the story and everything. But I'll say this, I'm going to have more content coming out on my YouTube channel for my overall impressions of Destiny 2. But as far as a review goes, I don't want to do that until I played the complete game. So there won't be a real review of Destiny 2 probably for at least another week, maybe even two before that, because I want to do the raid. I want to do everything before I say, all right, here's my true opinion on Destiny 2. But I can say this, from what I got to play when I was up at Bungie, you guys already know about the European Dead Zone, but I got to check out all the planets. I got to check out, or worlds, I should say. I got to check out Io, got to check out Titan, I got to check out Nessus. I did two strikes outside of the one that was in the beta. I got to play all the new PvP play modes, the survivor mode, played all the new PvP maps. You know, I know there's been a lot of leaks that have been coming out over the past week or so. I'm not going to comment on those. I hope you guys have not read or seen any of those, because I think what I got from Destiny 2, like I said, I played about 75% of the campaign. They literally cut us off at a cliffhanger, so I still don't know how it truly ends. But one thing I'll say is that once you hit level 20, it starts to open up the end game for Destiny 2. Like, before you get to level 20, you're not able to do strikes, Nightfall, any of that stuff. You're not going to have a lot of quest lines or anything like that. But once you hit level 20, that's going to open up more vendors in the farm. You're going to be able to do more quests. You're going to be able to start to do strikes. You're going to start getting legendary gear. You're going to start to see some exotic engrams drop. I know there's going to be some controversy with Eververse, because Eververse now isn't just, you know, you pay to get some cute emotes or things like that. Eververse is also where you turn in your bright engrams. And when you turn in a bright engram, which a bright engram you will get every time you level up after you hit level 20, and it'll drop while you're playing things in the Crucible, like if it's a faction reward, things like that. But a bright engram, you'll get things like ghosts, you'll get sparrows, you're going to get weapon mods as well, which here's where the controversy I think is going to come in, because the fact that Eververse, you can buy bright engrams from Eververse. So it's still RNG, but you can literally throw money at the situation until you get the mod that you want, if you're crazy enough to do something. Like me personally, I will never drop a freaking dime with Eververse. I haven't before and I never will. But Eververse is where you're going to get your weapon mods. Weapon mods are going to be the way that, now that you have static rolls on all the weapons, that's how you're going to customize your weapons for what you want it to be. If you have the same energy SMG and it drops at solar, but you want a void version and you want, why am I blanking on the
solar?
Arc. Thank you. Or if you want an arc or a void version of that same solar SMG, you'll be able to put a weapon mod on it if you get that drop for it. You want to make customers to the, you know, the rifle barrel, things like that. Obviously, a lot of the different roles that we've seen now, they put those into the weapon mod. So you'll be able to customize your guns the way that you want. The vault is freaking huge now. I think no one's going to be able to complain about that. I'm not going to give the exact number because I could be freaking wrong, but I know I saw at least 200 slots on page one. I'll just say that. You guys will see it when the game finally comes out. Another cool thing with engrams now is you basically get a sneak peek of what potentially can drop out of that engram. One of the videos that I'll have, which will be up on my YouTube page, is you'll see me inspecting an exotic engram, and I can see, I think it was about five or six different options that could drop out of that. And then obviously I turn it into the Cryptarch and I get what I get. But going back to the bright engram thing again, like I said, that's where you're going to get your weapon mods from. You don't have to buy bright engrams. You'll get them from quote unquote leveling up. You can get them as faction rewards, things like that. So you can play the game and get bright engrams, and there's still going to be the RNG element as to what kind of weapon mods are going to drop. Now, one thing when I was talking about the different burns, to be clear, burns, you can only change the burns on energy weapons. I can't have a kinetic weapon and decide I want it to be solar. That's not how it works, or vice versa. I can't have an energy weapon and say, all right, I'm going to take the burn mod off of it and make it a kinetic weapon. Does not work that way. Those only work on energy slots.
I have a quick question with regards to that. Are these one use and done mods?
Yes. So
you once can't you take it on and off and
nope.
on and off and on
nope.
and off.
And there is an economy to that. You're going to, Burn Glimmer, which I have to say, and I don't have this 100% confirmed, I don't think there's a cap on Glimmer anymore at all. I mean, you watch my gameplay, I was like at 75,000 at one point.
Okay.
And I think it goes all the way up to 999999, I think. I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure Noseworthy said that's what it would be. Another thing that, speaking of Noseworthy, that I can, he tweeted it out, but I can finally talk about it because he told us at the event, you don't need to equip your highest level gear when you turn in engrams now. The game will look at your entire inventory, see what your highest potential power could be, not light, power, and the engram. And again, you'll get a sneak peek to kind of let you know
and apply
what,
it as
what that power level is going to be when you decrypt that engram, which I think is another cool quality of life feature that's going to be in the game. Like I said, I don't want to get into too much because I don't want to basically tell you the game. I want people to experience this because trust me, in my 15 hours of playing, stupid smile on my face the whole time, I could still be playing it right now because that's how much I enjoyed it. I understand I'm a quote unquote super fan or whatever, so you know, mileage may vary on that, but very enjoyable game. I feel like what Destiny 2 to me is the original promise of what they were talking about in 2013. I feel like they're getting closer to that. They've had 3 years. And again, I'm going to drop this name on the ground right now. I was talking to Irk at the Destiny 2 experience here at PAX yesterday, and we're kind of talking about that a little bit. And he was saying that for them, they look at this, they've had 3 years of feedback from the community, from internally, just, you know, looking at statistics, what works, what doesn't. And that's the unique thing about Destiny is that game that we played back in September 2014 is not the game that we're playing right now. It's talking about Destiny 1. It has evolved in 3 years, which is a very rare thing to see in a video game, to see it be a living, breathing thing that can change. So here we are with Destiny 2. Destiny 2 is literally the culmination of all the information they've gotten over the past 3 years. And here we are with it. It is like the ultimate quality of life adjustment going into Destiny 2. And then when 3 years from now in September 2020, we're going to look back at what we launched with today and we're not even going to recognize the game because, again, the game's going to evolve. It just that's Destiny. That's how it works. It is the ultimate community supported feedback game that we have in this industry right now.
So the question begs to be asked, what happens with players who have, whether they've got 3 hours or 30 hours or 300 hours in Destiny 1 and are essentially burnt out? They're done with that whole grind concept of
I would say from my point, if you're burnt out on Destiny right now, you're tired of grinding, Destiny's not the game for you. Because at its core, it is a loot shooter. That's what it is. It is about chase, about RNG and chasing loot, which means you're going to grind. That's just what it is.
And I know Danny just reached for the mic and that just like triggered a question. Do you think someone like Danny, who has been salted from Destiny 1, do you think that this is a game that you could see Danny playing or putting 150, 200 hours
into? No, Danny will not put 150, 200 hours in this game.
Man, you don't know me.
You know, I'm done. You talk about the game.
Yeah, I'm messing with you.
I'm being dead serious when I say this. Yeah. I don't see you playing this for 200 hours. I don't. I see you playing through the campaign, doing the strikes, doing a couple nightfalls, doing the raid, and then you're going to move on to something else.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I'm just going by past history. I think you'll enjoy your time playing Destiny 2. Don't get me wrong. You'll play PvP, stuff like that. Yeah. But you're not going to get vested like I am. You're not. But I think you will play it enough to get your money's worth out of it, and you will experience the end game of Destiny 2 and understand what it is. Which, just talking on that again, like I said, level 20 starts to open up the end game, and there's a lot there. I got excited once I hit level 20 because I was like, oh my God, look at all these things to do. You know what I mean? You guys experience that when you go play it on September 6th. I'm not going to spoil all that stuff here. But I know I touched on PvP just a little bit. Like I said, getting to play Survivor mode was cool because it's a different take on elimination because you only get so many respawns in a pool of the four of you. So it's not like I die, I got three respawns. For me, you got three respawns, you get three respawns. It's like, I forget how many respawns exactly. Let's just say it's four, for example. That's all you get as a team. So once all those respawns are gone, now it's down to just straight up elimination. And we ran into a lot of scenarios where the other team would, because it's going to let you know who has respawns left and all that, where the teams run out of respawns. So now all of a sudden it's a 3-on-1 situation where that one person has no more respawns. We might still have a couple, you know, in the bank, whereas we can play more aggressive that way. Cause we know, all right, if he takes one of us out, we're going to respawn. We can go back and go get him. You know what I mean? So there was some intense match, and that's why I was kind of hinting at, like with Destin Legere over at IGN, his little fire team, our little fire team, we had a little thing going on. There was like a lot of yelling and hooting and hollering going back and forth and that. And we had some really intense matches. And like I said, some of the new maps that you guys are going to get to play, I don't know. I had a lot of fun with them. I really did. You got to see one of them, Javelin 4, I believe it is, in the Destiny 2 PC beta. Played a lot of Control on that. I think, did we do Survivor mode on that? I can't remember. But your competitive playlist is going to be Survivor mode and Countdown, which everyone's played Countdown in the beta. Then on the quick play side, which is not the competitive, that's where Control is going to be. Supremacy comes back. I believe Clash is in that as well. Things like that, you know. So, I mean, it's Destiny 2 PvP. You know, back in May, I was really against the 4v4 stuff. I'm still not 100% convinced that everything should be 4v4 in Destiny 2. I still think there should be some 2v2 and some 1v1 playlists as well. But I do understand going away from 6 because it has made PvP more tactical now, where I don't have to worry so much about being engaged with two people in front of me. And because there's 6 people on the freaking map, there's that one dude that comes up behind me and takes me out. You know what I mean? It's more about these more about teamwork, communication, and primary gunplay, which is huge to me because it's not about grenade spam. It's not about supers, things like that. Day one patch is coming out, so I'm not going to comment on drops as far as how much power ammo you're going to get, the supers and PvP grenades and things like that, because that is still subject to change. But overall, I was very happy with what I played up at Bungie. Again, thank you to Activision for inviting me up there to it. Had a blast with it. I'm obviously going to recommend Destiny 2. I love it. I think a lot of people like Danny that may have tried it early on and walked away from it, I would suggest give it another chance. I would say to people that have never played Destiny, this is going to be a great opportunity to jump in. One other thing before I stop talking, another cool little feature, which will be a nice nod, and this isn't the only nod to veteran players. There's still something secret they haven't told us yet. Dialogue for new players will be different for veteran players in some of the story stuff. Like, as an example, I was on Titan. First time I got introduced to the Taken coming back. Because I played as a new character, right? It doesn't know that, you know, I have 3 years of Destiny. The game explained what the Taken are to me as if it was the first time I had ever seen them. Mm-hmm. Hey, here's the Taken. Here's the history of them, blah, 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 blah. Whereas from what I've been told, when I come in as a veteran player, the game knows it. So I will get completely different dialogue, acknowledging that I've already dealt with the Taken in the past. They did that in European Dead Zone with the Fallen. They explain the Fallen to you so you understand who they are, whereas a veteran player is not going to get that same dialogue, which I think that is a cool little perk that they're going to do in the game.
I know we're going to wrap it up because we're going to play the roundtable discussion and stuff. Your thoughts about the Destiny 2 event that they have here at PAX? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up too. So I got lucky yesterday. I went to we went the first time because shout out to Guardian One. That's the clan that I play with. Some of those guys are out here at PAX, so I wanted to see him and make sure I saw him. Mm-hmm. They were actually sitting in on the panel, which was talking about community. So, you know, the line is insane to get in the store. So at first we didn't think we could get in because we saw there's a long line, but that was actually just for the store to buy merch. Mm-hmm. But to go to the panel, there wasn't a line. So I went in, met up with my Guardian One people, you know, shook some hands, whatever, real quick, and then I was out. And I guess you said Deej saw me, and then almost said something while he was doing the panel, but then was like, oh, I'm not going to say nothing. I didn't even realize that. So then we left. But then later in the day, I came back, and they actually let me go down on the floor while they were doing the cosplay. And I got to watch the whole cosplay thing, which was really cool sitting down there. And I got to talk to some, you know, some Bungie people. Like I said, I talked to Irk, obviously Deej, I'm talking to Cosmo, and David Shaw, who is the PC lead. We got to talk about that because the PC beta just ended. So we were talking about that and all that kind of stuff. So it was a real cool experience being there. And again, man, this is why I almost said the F word. This is why I love this game. People, dude. You saw it. You guys saw it.
Yeah, it was. It was
they freaking loved this game. But to see the cosplay going on and to see nobody's getting paid for this. They're doing it because they're passionate about the game. They're passionate about the community. And dude, there was the person that won did Axis, you know, from Rise of Iron, the raid boss.
Amazing.
All homemade. Amazing. Freaking amazing. And just to see, like I said, all these homemade costumes of all the different Guardians and stuff. Just, I mean, you should have seen the Bungie employees there. All of them just had a big smile on their face seeing that.
The one that really resonated with me was the one that was dressed as Cade.
Like, yeah.
That one was amazing. Yeah. Like, when I saw the video, I was just like, dude, that looks like the character.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. They nailed it. It was perfect. It was great. That's one of the things. And I know you've keyed on this several times during, you know, whether we're talking just you and I, or we're talking on the show or whatever, we're talking with Deej or what have you. The community, the way that community in general has rallied around that game, whether it be from a cosplay perspective, whether it's just, you know, general community building, you know, whether it's raiding, you know, LFG type stuff, or, you know, the Guardian Con and stuff like that. It's just amazing to see how they've exploded. And that's, you know, shout out to them. Fantastic.
Danny just threw me off showing me something. I don't even know what I just looked at. But overall, that Destiny 2 experience that they're having here at PAX right now has just been fantastic. And, I mean, I'll just say this as kind of a wrap up. Obviously, we'll do a full Destiny 2 review later on. But just as a wrap up, since May 16th, when I went to that Destiny 2 reveal, to here we are right now, we're recording this September 1st or 2nd, whatever day it is right now. Mm-hmm. It's been an amazing summer just with this game, the access that I've been able to get. Like I said, going to Bungie and just like, dude, I swear to God, I've probably seen Deej 100 times this summer. And I'm not even exaggerating. Like, even just here at PAX, every time I look around, there's Deej. Yeah. There's Deej.
Even, you know, at events or at the bar, I'm like, hey, like random places.
Yeah. Last night he rolled up his sleeve like he's going to fight me or something, which is hilarious. But it's been an amazing experience. Like I said, the whole Bungie thing has been a bucket list item for me, just on a personal level. And I'm just thankful that I had this opportunity to be able to cover this game. Like I said, I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. I think these two roundtable discussions you're about to hear, you're going to enjoy those as well. And, you know, I'm sure you guys are going to have more questions and everything. You know, hit us up on Twitch, hit us up on email, Twitter, the whole thing. And it's about to begin. Destiny Wife Problems is starting again.
Definitely, man. No, props to you, man. And a great job with the roundtables too, man. So, all right, but we have a brand new sponsor for this week's episode of Gamer Tag Radio.
Yep. Shout out to Movement Watches. Thanks for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. One of the things is funny, Paris is talking about, you know, the time you spend, whether it's in game or in the community, and talking about that. And then, you know, it's just perfect how, you know, time Movement Watches supporting the show. So I just thought that was a funny way to try to segue into the live read. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Movement Watches start out at like $95, and go out to a department store. I mean, there you can spend an easy $200, $300, $400, $500 on a watch. So Movement figured out that if they sell them online, they're able to cut out the middleman and retail markup and just provide the best possible price. You know, so, you know, a while back I was looking for watches, and Movement actually caught my eye on Instagram, and I had gone through, you know, I'd spent a good amount of time going through all of their makes and models, and, you know, lo and behold, they sent them out to us, you know, so that we could check them out. Dude, I love it, dude. It's amazing.
Which one you got? Which one you got?
I believe it's the Opal. I believe Onyx. Sorry, it's called the Onyx.
I was looking at that one, too. I was debating, man, should I get the Onyx one or what? But I just love the different colors. I know there was some that it was like black and also like a light blue, baby blue? Watches and stuff. I just love the colors that they have in the different ones. But
yeah, it's the design. They're not like the techie, you know, the techie brands. They're classic, but they're modern, contemporary for 2017.
And it looks very classy too.
Dude, love that. It's amazing that in the time that they've had them out, they've sold over 1 million watches in 160 different countries. And so you can get one too, right? 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/GTR. Dude, it's just got an amazingly really clean design. Seriously, you know, since we got them, you know, we've been getting, you know, compliments here at PAX. So now's the time to step up your watch game. Go to mvmt.com/GTR. Join the movement.
All right, but thanks. And let's play this audio and we'll be right back after this.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Take it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Now to the villain. You know, we spent a lot of time developing Gaul as a character. Like, God, like 2 years on the crazy, almost like 2 years, yeah. Almost 2 years since the idea of him first popped up. And, you know, we just kept iterating and iterating and iterating and iterating and digging into what his past might be and, you know, what he wants and what motivates him. And I think that in the course of, you know, trying to, you know, develop a three-dimensional, relatable villain, we tried to use him as a means of, like, magnifying the things that are most important to us as the player, right? Like, the light, our powers, the traveler. And, you know, when you have a villain who shares a common motivation and a common goal that the player has, I think that it generates organic and very deep conflict. I think we did that.
Why didn't you have the Guardian like interact with Gormor? Because beyond that first scene where he beats you off the tower, in the stuff we played anyway, I don't think you run into him again. No. And it felt like, because I think Luke described him as wanting to be a bit like Alan Rickman from Die Hard, or someone described him that way, I think, in one of the videos. But Alan Rickman and Bruce Willis meet a lot in Die Hard, mm-hmm. and they talk on the phone. And is that because, was the problem that your Guardian doesn't talk, so you can't create those moments?
Yeah, for me, it was really about, you know, Gaul has delusions of godhood. I think you guys probably picked up on this by now. He believes he is deserving of more. He is worthy of more. I think you keep hearing the term chosen and worthy, at least. And you've probably seen three, maybe four big scenes with him up to this point.
Four.
And, you know, we have a journey that we have to go on. You know, we, like, I'll reference, you know, the sort of hero's journey, the Campbellian side of it again. And and we have to go all the way to hell and back to go and face Gaul. We have a lot to learn. We have a lot to do. And I think that by having some level of separation between them, you know, elevates Gaul to that sort of, you know, something that's analogous to godhood. And then we have to go right back up and, you know, scale the proverbial Mount Olympus to get to him.
So at this stage, does Gaul think we're not worthy to face him and we have to earn our way back up?
Yeah, he says it right to our face right there in the beginning.
We're a bunch of cockroaches. Yeah. We're just in the way or whatever. We're not worthy. He's still confused why the traveler would have chosen such a weak race. When compared to such, you know,
to Gaul and the Red Legion.
The thing I took away from everything with Gaul and story, and I was kind of telling some buddies, I don't know if you've seen Daredevil, that's on Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
He's Kingpin to me, where he's a villain that I feel, that's funny.
That's hilarious.
I can feel sympathetic to that.
Or may not have had that exact conversation.
Yeah.
I think that's great for character development that, okay, yeah, he's a bad guy, but I understand why he's a bad guy and why he's doing what he's doing, because, you know, like you said, he wants the light. And even where we got to in the story, he's realizing, I don't want to take it by force. I want the light to
Man, we're going to send you out to shill for the game. Man, that is awesome.
You know, and then I'll even say this, I came in just slightly late, but the other thing I took away, I felt like in the first 2 hours of me playing Destiny 2, you told more story than what I had for 3 years with the original Destiny. And that's not a slight to, hell, I played a game 2,000 hours, so obviously I love the game. But just in that little bit, I understand more about the Traveler. I understand more about the Cabal. I understand more about their motivations in this whole universe that, you know, that you're trying to tell with this story. And I was like, this is good. And I see where it's starting to go. And well, I won't say it, but I see where it's starting to go, and it excites me.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. Sweet.
We said that
mission accomplished.
We said that in an earlier press talking about it, and it's something that I'm really glad to hear you say that, because that it makes us sound like we're not lying to anybody when we say that we've been listening to everyone. We've been watching and playing and really tapping into what we love about Destiny and how can we make it better and how can we tell better stories and how can we build better characters. And you said something that I've been hearing a lot of is, we have a bad guy, but I think we just have it. We have an awesome character happens to be the bad guy.
Right.
And that's something we did with every one of our characters this round, is we made sure that Zavala is fleshed out. He's got an arc. Ikora's got an arc. Hawthorne's got an arc. Like everyone's been given the appropriate amount of time to make sure they live and breathe. And then that they're featured in a specific way to actually support the story and help drive it. So the cast of characters, is all there to help to lift that up and prop it up, versus just having one or two, you know, characters or cameos that sell more of a question than an answer.
If I can say one more thing, I don't want to hog all the questions, but even with, you're talking about Zavala, Ikora, and Cade, the fact that the light was taken away from them, and especially more Ikora, you see that she has fear for probably the first time in centuries, where she's actually afraid. She's like, oh my God, I could die doing this. Uh-huh. And what all that means, are they even guardians? So, you know, I love that you've taken the story that route, because the fact that we had the light taken from us and you had to struggle for those first couple levels and you're like, man, this sucks. I want it back. And then you get it back, you're actually appreciative of having the light back.
Yeah.
And that's our point of view versus like, living through the point of views of what it's like for the Vanguard, who've had the light forever, and what's it like to have it as long as they've had it be stripped away.
Right. Yeah, no, we've said it before, like in other areas, like, you know, some of the best Superman stories are the ones where Superman has his powers taken away, you know, and you get to the heart of who Superman is. It's not the fact that he's got heat vision or he can fly or whatever. It's his heart.
It's the choices,
you know,
he makes.
It's his yeah. moral compass, you know, and that's like, and you called it out right there, right? You know, it's like Zavala said, like, without the light, are we even guardians anymore? Well, I think that becomes a thematic question that we pose, and ideally we've, you know, by the time we get to the end of it, that there's a moment where it is answered. So
there is, and I'm excited.
How come the other guardians don't just go to the shard and get their light back?
So we are that's a very good question. We are a chosen one, and there are some this is very much a chosen one type story. Now I know, you know, this sort of gets into the sort of philosophical questions on, you know, what's Golden Path and, you know, what is continuity, what is story versus what is gameplay, you know, where's the line between the immersion side of it and, you know, the repetitious, the ritual side of just playing a game over and over again. And you'll find that we didn't have a lot of room to dig into that exact question on that surface level story, like through the main campaign and the cinematics, and believe me, we stopped and we had moments where we were like, should we put this right here, right forefront, and answer this question? But, you know, we do have other story channels, whether it's the short stories and the adventures, or, you know, some of you may have seen it already, the L2, the lore tab on some of the weapons and the gear. That question is answered in another channel, and we felt that in the interests of you know, keeping the story focused on us and our player and the player's journey, that we didn't want to bog that down with. We didn't want to just drop that into as just another like exposition. You know, each attempt that we tried to make, it just looked like we were doing this.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, we have a story reason, but that story reason required another channel to dig into it appropriately. So it's there.
The character whose dialogue I enjoyed the most is one you don't see, which is Failsafe.
She's hilarious.
Is it fair to say that we're going to find out more about her
yes.
in other ways?
Oh my God, yes.
She's probably quite a bit more sinister than we think.
We had a ball with Failsafe, an absolute ball. Somebody, like, I remember, oh God, this moment will stick with me for the rest of my career, the rest of my life. Like, we were sitting around, we were digging into who Failsafe is, and somebody said,
one, actually two things, obviously, said two things, and we were like, oh my God, that's it. And then it was just, we ran out, and that writer just went and like, just like threw together like a monologue of her dipping back and forth between her two sides. And that first pass, like right, was just gold. And we were like, yep, that's it. We're going to take it and run with it. So there's plenty more on the fail-safe front, I promise you. It looks like you've been wanting to say something.
Yeah, it was to go back to the sort of chosen one idea.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Gaul wants to be a god, and mm-hmm. you're effectively a god among guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Was it difficult to make it? Because the nice thing about Destiny, it always makes you feel like a hero without feeling like a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Was that difficult to find that exact balance of, you know, all these characters coming to you to save the day without it being, you're going to have to save us again? Was that something that you thought that going from level to level, you had to kind of balance how the player would feel?
In a lot of ways, I think it helps. It when you have like such a, I think that exact thing is what actually makes it easier for us to propel the player through the story. You know, we are a linchpin, you know, we are that concentrated ingot of theme and conflict and heroism, and having that burden on our shoulders as the player character does help us. It gives us that momentum to just shoot right through the story. And honestly, like, you know, when we're talking about Gaul and his delusions of godhood, you know, we need to give our player heroes all the power and, you know, godlike oomph that we can stand right there face to face with him. You know, he kicked us down like hard, and he pushed us right off. He took away our power. He kicked us off a spaceship, like from the atmosphere, like, you know, and then we crawl right back through the muck, and, you know, we go through all the gates and, you know, fight through all the monsters to build that sense of to be worthy of facing him. So
is the exo stranger ever going to have time to explain what she didn't have time to explain?
Haven't heard that one before. Yeah, someday. I don't want to ruin anything. I don't want to ruin anything for you guys.
Last year I was told this year.
Yeah, well, I don't want to ruin anything.
Is it fair to say, where the story seems to be headed, that our perception of what the Traveler is and how it's quote-unquote being used in the universe could change? Because just some of the conversations that we've had, it made me rethink. I guess I'm going off. I know, but it just made me rethink. I go, well, the Cabal see the Traveler as one thing. Mm-hmm. We see it as another. We obviously mm-hmm. know the Fallen have their perception of mm-hmm. it. The Hive had their perception mm-hmm. of it. So is it a thing of it is whatever it needs to be to that particular
group? Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. You know, the Traveler, you know, both in a lot of ways, literally and metaphorically, is the center of our universe, and everything orbits around it. You know, it's I almost said some weird shit. I'm not going to. You know, it's mass. There's a gravity about it, you know, and like a planet or like a moon or something like that. Everything is going to like just kind of fall into its wake, you know, and it's going to draw things to it. And the idea that, you know, mass is gravity, you know, and everything's going to come towards it, and we're all going to revolve around it. And yeah, I
like what our community,
you can't let it. Yes. I would just say yes.
I think our community, takes time, and everyone has their interpretations of what they think the Traveler might be. And I think that's the same thing within our story. This big object was there, and as far as we know, it did something. And every combatant and every race of humanity has a interpretation of what that might be. And I think you might learn a little bit more about it throughout this if we do our job right.
You said a little earlier about how in Destiny 2 you wanted to flesh out characters like Zavala and Cade and Ikora, but they've been around since Destiny 1, and I guess my question isn't, I hope this doesn't come off as a criticism or anything like that, but do you feel like you're playing catch up with the story in terms of these characters? Like maybe there was some like wasted storytelling moments from the first game that...
Not at all. Mm-mm. Not at all. Like I will go right back to the analogy that I made earlier, which is, you know, how do you get to the heart of Kal-El? Mm. You take away all of his powers, right? And I think that I should just have you answer the question. But no, I mean, like, Zavala, without the Light of Guardians anymore. Like, you nailed it with the Ikora thing, right? Like, she is our, you know, she is our fearless warlock. I mean, how are you introduced to her? Everybody here played Destiny 1, right?
Yeah.
All right, take a second and put yourself through the eyes of Destiny, of somebody new to the franchise. And the first time you see Ikora in that cinematic, and the first time you see her in the world, you will have no mercy in me. You know, like, that's who she is. And then the next time you see her with her power stripped away and some sense of identity stripped away, only then can we find out who she is. So I would say... it is not wasted. This is an opportunity to evolve. And the challenge that we have both after this moment, where you guys are in the story and how we ultimately, you know, climax in the story, and then the stories that we'll tell, you know, in the future, it is nothing but opportunity. When you look at a character who now has to look at the world a different way because everything that they were was taken away from them.
Cool.
What does that mean to that character? So,
awesome. Thank you.
Your team is crafting the main kind of campaign missions. How conscious are you all of, you know, that you have a community and a game that people might be playing through this 3 or 4, maybe on a couple platforms, 6 times? Do you all think about that? Or?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Big time. You know, and like that, and that, that sort of the ritual nature of replaying missions, you know, that even has like a little narrative wrapper around it. So, it's storyfied, if you will. Mm-hmm. And we hope that that just adds just another layer of interest to, you know, the ritual side of it.
So does that mean you're like hiding extra elements that aren't kind of surface level, or?
Sometimes, like we put a lot of effort into contextual dialogue when it comes to strikes. So, I this isn't news actually, because like it was the same in some of our later strikes in the Destiny 1 era. There, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but like as you played strikes over and over again, you were getting different buckets of dialogue, you know, and they get kind of mixed and matched so that like you get some kind of like different experience. Like if there's two characters in your ear, there's going to be a version that's very centric on one. You know, another time you might get another one that's very centric on another. You may get another one that's an even split. You may get one that's just the ghost going on and on and on and on and on. We obviously do, so that, you know, we want to try to do our best to keep it fresh. But I think like when you start hitting like 6, 7, 8, 9, or in my case, like with Sethix Prime and I played that thing like 50, 60, Omnigul. Oh my God. Let me get me started on Omnigul. Like, yeah, like that scream, right? Like, at some point, like there's nothing you can do about it. And you have to acknowledge the fact, that's what I was saying earlier. You eventually have to acknowledge the fact that you're playing a video game at that point.
First time is most important.
The first time is most important. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of strikes, in vanilla Destiny, the strikes acted sort of as like world bosses, so you would finish all the story campaigns before it all got questified in King. And then you'd do the strike as like the boss, and it sort of like capped off the story. So like Sethix Prime was you putting down the fallen scheme that you'd uncovered there. But strikes don't appear in the director anymore except in the playlist. So are they not slotting into the story?
The campaign's a campaign. We have a nice big story. All the adventures are their own little short stories. Mm-hmm. And the strikes are sort of like our novellas, you know, and we have nothing but opportunity to, in our quest to infuse story into this game, like nothing that had come before in this franchise, we found that as I worked with our team of writers, that there were a lot of stories that that the writers desperately wanted to tell. And we had opportunities and strikes and adventures, you know, outside of the main campaign to tell those stories. Mm-hmm. And thus, like, so you know, the way strikes. the way we do stories now, like with the strikes, was an opportunity just to tell an isolated story in and of itself. Okay. You know, that's not to say it doesn't plug back into the world, you know, like, you know, when we attack a destination, like attack, like my side of the attack, right? Like attack it creatively, attack it narratively. You know, we try to build a narrative for the world. Like, you know, you can look at Nessus, right? And, you know, it's been overtaken by the Vex and, what was it before? It's a centaur. What does it mean to have a planet that's moving way outside the solar system and coming back around? Like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on in this world. That destination has a story unto itself, and that story can be broken up into a million tiny little pieces, and we can tell all those stories, whether it's through the world quests or the adventures or the strikes and whatnot. So there's just too many story opportunities in a world as dense as ours.
But will they go onto the planet maps, or are they only ever going to live in a playlist?
You know, I don't remember, actually. I've only seen them in the playlist. I can't confirm that 100%. So
I don't know either. We'll ask the next panel.
Yeah, ask the next
panel. Speaking of which, we are...
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio.
Thanks, everybody. So we have about 20 minutes. Good, you've all got your audio stuff. It's fancy. I've seen a few of these.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Jason's introduced himself. This is Jason Sussman, who's one of the world art leads at Bungie. You've probably been told this already as well by now, but I'm going to reiterate it just so that it's ingrained in your brain. Anything that we talk about here, the embargo is the 5th of September, so the second date that you've got on your paper. So I'm going to hand straight over to you guys in that case, if anyone wants to kick off with the first question.
Why is the art so cool in Destiny 2?
Oh, man. There you go.
That's a great question.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Yeah, man, you know, look, just to be frank, we're trying to push the envelope of what we want to do for Destiny. Because I'm going to answer that question because I just feel so honored that you think that. I think that we're always trying to, we want to make the most beautiful things we can possibly do as artists, and any chance we get to kind of like evolve or take that to the next step, we're going to do it. So, well,
I mean, being serious for a sec, Nessus as an example, like just being able to explore that world today and just mm-hmm. see all the different environments and the Vex influence that you've done in that world. I mean, what was the inspiration for that?
So it's interesting. So I actually worked on Nessus. That was one of the ones that had the heaviest hand in, and Sam Rux and a bunch of other guys closed it out. It's a whole team effort, obviously. But I think it was an opportunity for us to, we wanted to play with verticality. We wanted to further the fiction of the Vex and how they would fully terraform a planet. Mm-hmm. We wanted to introduce some, well, we wanted to reintroduce some things you already knew about them, but on a larger scale. For example, the milk falls and showing their data milk and what that is and kind of further that narrative. And we wanted to introduce some new architectural styles to the Vex. And then on the tail end of that, we were just kind of having fun with that destination. And we were like, can we throw something from the Vault of Glass? We want to like kind of talk about how that's built and like just have this moment in this lost sector. And so that was kind of a neat thing for us to play with, and fiction was like a-okay with that. And it's honestly just kind of some notes of things we wanted to hit, some things that we really loved previously about Black Garden, visiting it on a grander scale.
You know what is the most difficult? Create something from the zero, like the first game, mm-hmm. or creating a sequel and, okay, I can't change a lot because players must feel familiar with what they are seeing. Mm-hmm. What's the most difficult?
The most difficult?
Yes.
I don't know. I wouldn't say either one is more difficult than the other. They each have their own challenges. I think that... honestly, like I think, like being able, yeah, they're both pretty equal. They each have their own challenges and their own things that are very motivational for us to work on. With Destiny 2, like again, trying to like broaden what is known is a challenge in itself. Like, okay, where are we going to take this now? I mean, this is something that's already established, you know, where can we push it? But I think that we have what we've created in our architecture and in our races and in the fiction, there's a lot of room to grow from there. And I don't know, man, it's been some, well, let me back up. Taking some of our spaces, for example, the challenge that is always there, whether it's from Destiny 1 to Destiny 2, is placing story throughout the destination and making sure that flow works. And now that we have Lost Sectors, we have adventures, and adventures are stories. We have the storyline that goes through. We have strikes, we have raids, public encounters, all those kind of things. That's always a challenge to make sure that the player can understand and read those spaces. And I think that's all, but that's always been a very kind of a fun challenge. It's
fine.
I enjoy it. I enjoy the challenge. Yeah. I don't know if that answers the question really, yes, but yes. They're kind of equal. Like I don't think I could compare one to the other. Yeah.
What about the planets? Like, obviously the new planets that you guys have decided to really showcase in this game here, was there a thought process to, like, choosing those specific planets or just, you know, going to those types of locations as opposed to, like, other planets that are obviously in our solar system as opposed to going to, like, you know, Pluto or any other planet that might be out there?
Yep. I think EDZ is one of those things that we've always kind of, just talking about that one first, was something that it's always been a twinkle in our eye. We've kind of nodded to it before, and it's just... it's an architectural thing, I think, from a world art perspective. I think from a fictional perspective, it was obviously we needed to help ground ourselves a little bit. And then reaching out to Nessus. Nessus was something that it was really kind of a story of its own before we identified where it was in space. Same thing with Io. Like, we were kind of identifying like where these were. Io came on much quicker. Like, we knew where we wanted that to be. But fiction drives a lot of that. There is a lot of world art input as well of what feels right, palette wise and, the tonality of the whole, looking at the big picture, like backing up and understanding like, what does that color swatch look like front to back? And so that takes a, kind of makes its mark. There's a lot of hands in how we decide that. And sometimes they switch. I mean, there's been times where we flip like where things are, even down to the bubble level where as we develop this game, like we understand we build something for this certain combatant to be through there. But after a while and we look at it, we back up and we're playing the whole game. We're like, you know, it feels better to kind of like pull these guys out and have these guys here because it's just the theming. It's a flow, right? This flows better.
Yep. Well, that actually leads right into something I was thinking about, like Titan. Mm-hmm. That's where the Hive have
you know,
pretty much infiltrated everything. So that was that always the original decision? Let's take Titan. Let's put the Hive there. And something I've noticed, just a common theme with Destiny, when you look at the Fallen, other than Rise of Iron with the Siva, the Fallen have always been that race that they're intruding on what someone else mm-hmm. is doing. Is that like a conscious thing that you guys try to do when you design a level?
Yep. Each race has its own thematic, like delivery, like how they're delivered to that destination, what their purpose is in the destination. You know, Titan is a great example of, yes, we knew like from the beginning, like Hive was going to be on that destination. And that story mission and even outside of that portion of that destination are built intentionally to create that claustrophobia to kind of, you know, to pair up with the Hive and how they're kind of skittering in the dark and to kind of evoke that feeling of, I don't know which direction they're going to be coming from at any one time. But it also has those moments where we free you up and allow you to kind of take a moment to be outside and have a more open air experience and to kind of take in the destination and its functionality and what it's there for. But yeah, it was intentionally... We knew, and same thing with Nessus, we knew it was going to be Vex. We always knew it was going to be Vex. We did have various versions of Nessus as we came through because it started with, actually I'll back up, I was telling this other group, like when we start early on, it's like a mass out process where we have a basic understanding of what the destination is, and we'll kind of gray box model it. And Nessus was one of those things where we knew we wanted to have verticality, but we didn't know at first we wanted it to be like fully Vex terraformed. That was something that was kind of brewing in the background. And but we keep moving forward because we're trying to experiment with how that would play out. And so eventually, you know, it was like, you know, we had some like terracing and whatnot. And then as we built this, we realized like, now this would be awesome. This is an opportunity to really go all in on the Vex and introduce a lot of new architecture and some really lean in on some of the fiction. And so that quickly flipped. And then we started refining that more and more. So it's kind of this iteration, you know, it's like sculpting, right? You're slowly finding that face that you're molding. And that's one of those things.
After you guys finished the first Destiny and its expansions, what did you guys think? We haven't done this and we want to do this in the next game. Is there anything that you...
I mean, from the get-go, the thing that always happens is, like, we want to go bigger, we want to go bolder, we want to, like, kind of double down on things that we've already done. And so that's kind of the macro. The other thing is, again, just delivering more fiction, finding opportunities to deliver more fiction in our destinations, finding more opportunities for space, like having larger spaces so that we can do more and separate the player from different or separate groups, different fire teams from each other while they're doing different activities.
Any aesthetic decision, specific decision, like, I don't know, like sea, we see the sea in a, which planet?
In Titan.
Titan.
Yeah. Yep.
Anything like that?
Yeah, I think that was one of, it was something that Rob Adams and that team, they really wanted to achieve, kind of showing these gravity waves, you know, kind of rolling through the city. I think that was something that started early on. They knew they wanted to do that. They wanted to have the boats floating and things sliding back and forth. And
that was cool, actually.
Yeah, I think those guys did a great job. And I think that, you know, they're trying to achieve, we're always trying to achieve movement in the environment. And I think that was a mechanism for them to be able to do that. I can't remember if this was a group I was talking about, Nessus with the trees, if I told you guys about the how we leaned in. So, sorry, my brain is like all of a sudden. It just happened where I was like, wait, have I said this? We knew something we wanted to do, like with Nessus with the trees. We're like, we really want to go crazy jungle. We knew we wanted to, again, Nessus started with verticality. Like, how do we take that to this vegetative level that we have not done before and really go all in on that? And what does that mean? Is that okay to traverse? Does it feel good to the player dividing the space up that way? And so I think that, you know, asking the big questions, trying it out, and then landing on things are like, okay, yeah, this works for us. And yeah, whether it be the ocean waves or actually in the gameplay space of having the vegetation. And then the IO, you know, doing really large scale stuff, like when you're going the Pyramidian structure and having like the hazards, all the electrical hazards, and kind of playing off that. Again, it's just going broader and really pushing the stuff that we knew forward in a bigger way.
And it's easy to imagine maybe a European city destroyed like the it is, but when we talk about another planet like Io or even Titan, from where comes your inspiration to design that kind of scenario, the kinds of terrain, from where it comes? You see Hubble photographs or...
Yeah, no, we look at a lot of reference. So it starts with reference at its core, and then that quickly moves. We have a very talented team of concept artists that goes to them. There's a lot of conversations back and forth and like kind of the direction of certain portions of the destination and how we want to separate them from each other. So like some areas may have more damage, some areas may have more hive influence, some areas are cleaner. And so that is kind of at the core. And then the concept team... we'll do a pass of of images, a series of images. They'll start usually macro with like a basic postcard of like, this is the destination. And then they'll dial in on some of the architecture that's already starting to begin as we're massing things out of how some of that will tear apart. And then honestly, it's just good old fashioned environment artist work of like, I want to tell a story of what happened here. Like they know in their head how this thing ripped and they want to convey that in some way. And so I think that all those things play a key component of how we develop the erosion or entropy that's in the destinations.
There's a lot of in the campaign of this game, it plays a lot of mystery. Like when we get to Nessus and then the ghost says, "Oh, there's nothing there," and then you get there and oh, so much for having nothing there. and speaking art wise, what kind of mysteries do you want to work with?
Oh, going forward?
Yeah, going forward.
Oh, there's plenty. I can't talk about forward because there's a plethora of things that I would love to dive into. I think that speaking of Destiny 2, the thing that I was super excited about that I kind of got a chance to do was going deep on Nessus and kind of fulfilling that Vex, like Terraform fantasy. There's also, you know, I enjoyed working on the farm, what little I did on the farm, but I enjoyed having a hand in that because that was a really interesting social space and it was a moment of fictional relevance that I really enjoyed, like being able to kind of build a space solely for, not only is it a social space, but solely for carrying that story forward and letting the player feel that kind of rebel alliance, you know, like building up and to fight back, you know. Yeah.
I should have asked that for the story team, but I have to ask you. Why we don't have any new enemy races in this game?
Like, any new enemy races?
Yeah, we have Vex and Cabal and the Fallen, but I was expecting for something new, some new kind of enemy. I don't know if you guys agree, but...
Disagree, actually.
Yeah,
I don't mind
because
I like him.
We really don't know anything about the Cabal, so this is that opportunity to know about the Cabal. I would hate for them to add in another enemy element and then it's like we need to know more about the enemies we already have before we start adding more. Because, I mean, if you go back and look at Destiny 1, I'm sorry, I'm taking this in the direction. But,
I was talking more like in the...
Gameplay-wise.
Gameplay, yeah. Not exactly the story thing, but the gameplay, I've like felt this... I don't know.
Yeah, it's not really... You're right. I mean, I can't go deep on this just because I wasn't as involved in that, but I will. I think it's in my mind, it's in the same vein of the same, like we want to push some of these, some of this fiction further. We want to go deeper, have a deeper dive so that there's a better understanding of what the threat is, immediate threat to our solar system is. And I think that this was an opportunity to really flesh out the Cabal, for example, and show some of their hierarchy and how they work and to, they feel very different. I mean, it's also a chance for us to kind of, evolve the combatants in a way that's, entertaining and fun to fight. And that being said, I think all the combatants got another pass on all of them, to help push them forward, evolve them and make them more sophisticated than they were previously. Especially the little fallen creepy crawly guys.
I love those.
Yes. I love those.
They look so intimidating.
Yeah, when they crawl across the ground. Like ninjas. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll take that. Right.
I know. I wish I could answer you, especially since every single. I don't know. This is terrible. You remind me of Jon Snow. Like I'm just And I'm just like, you know,
I've heard this before.
Yeah. Did you hear that before?
Jesus Christ, my friends in Brazil won't believe
it. That's
even
a
year.
You should just play out and tell people that's who you are. You're like, I'm actually, sorry. I don't want to take your time. I just had to say it.
Actually, you know nothing. Okay.
All right. Sorry.
We've got a couple of minutes left. So
can you tell us a little bit about coming up with some of the ideas of what you guys have in the backgrounds? Because I think it's just as interesting as some of the stuff that you actually go to. But when you look out in the distance, some of those places, again, they're really appealing to look at. But they also tell a little bit about like what's going on, obviously, with the story, what's going on out elsewhere in the midst of everything. Like, I mean, do you guys, you know, have like deep conversations about like what you guys want to have out in the background as like stuff as like a backdrop?
Absolutely. We're talking. So there's a whole team that's what they do. And they're called the Skybox team. And a skybox is a gross understatement of what those guys do. They're basically building an environment outside of our environment, and we're constantly in communication with them with landmarks, because the functional reason for having some of that stuff out there is so the player has a constant source of navigational points, so they know how to get to the destination no matter where they are, as long as they're exterior. The other thing is, again, more storytelling. It's grounding the space that you're in a much larger way, and it gives us some unique opportunities to further the story of that destination. So, and those guys are phenomenal. Like, it's crazy how much stuff they do, and that some of the technicalities of how they make this stuff work is pretty cool.
I think we have time for one more question, if anyone's got one.
What were the main inspirations to create the visuals for armor and weapons in the game? I feel a little of medieval in the armor, but there's something more there, right?
Yeah, I think that, the game as a whole, there's this sci-fi and there's this fantasy element, right? And there's all this in between. And so that gives us a pretty broad swath of material to pull from. And when we interpolate that kind of through our internal visual filter, you will definitely still see hints of kind of the ground, where that stuff's been grounded. Again, I didn't work specifically on armor or weapons, so I can't go deep dive just because I just didn't get a chance to interface with those guys that much. But they definitely pull, because I walk by their desk all the time and I look at some of the reference that they pull from, and they'll definitely have sets that have some kind of fictional foundation, like, modern, I guess, foundation to it. And then there's the aspects of either Amalan or any of the, I probably just mispronounced our own weapon type, but anyway, or like the Haka or any of those brands, they have a very distinct vibe that's internal, like how we developed, like what those visuals are. There's definitely real world reference that we'll start kind of using that as a foundation for each of those materials that we build for the armor or the weapons.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This is Gamer Tag Radio.
All right, Paris. So that was the roundtable discussion, man. Man, Paris took over. That was the Paris podcast. pretty cool, man. And anything else you want to say before we wrap it up, Paris? I think that was a great episode, man. Really cool.
No, I mean, just like I said, even before we went to the interview, it's just an amazing opportunity, man. I would just say, since we're here at PAX, I'll just address that as a whole. I mean, again, amazing to be here and be with so many people from within the community. Like, we walk down the street, people recognize us, talking to us and the whole thing. And just being able, like we were saying to our one good friend that works at EA this morning at breakfast, it's like being able to, the people that you interact with on social media, that face-to-face connection now, having that is amazing.
It's powerful.
It really is. And it goes to show you, you don't have to become friends with someone just because they live across the street with you. They can literally live across the world, but we're in this age now, social media, take all the snark and all that nonsense out of it. At its core, we've made friendships for life with a lot of these people. And some of them we never even met before. And some of them we may have met, back in 2008. But the point is, we have all these amazing connections now. I'll tell the story real quick. Yeah. I won't even name drop it. I'll just say there's a person that works at a certain game company that we've been Twitter friends for probably since E3, we've been Twitter friends, right? And we're at a certain event last night and we ran into each other and he looked at me, I looked at him and I go, I know you. Oh my God, we're Twitter friends, and we high-fived, and then, dude, we just went into this long conversation, never met before face-to-face, only conversated on Twitter, but it's like he knew me, I knew him, just from Twitter. And that's the power of social media when you take all the silliness out of it. And PAX, like I said, to me, is just a culmination of that, which is amazing. I love it.
Very cool, man. P, you want to say anything else before we wrap it up?
PAX is for the community, and doesn't matter whether you've got a developer title or you're just someone who's just here, you know, to show off cosplay, or you just want to check out games, whether you're, you know, AAA or you're an indie. It's one of the highlights, I think, of the industry, year in and year out. I love that it's grown to the point where it's had to become three separate events throughout the year, whether, you know, you're in Austin, you're in Boston, or you're up here in Seattle. So if you're a fan in any way, shape, or form of the gaming industry, that doesn't matter whether you're on a console, you're on a PC, you're on your smartphone or tablet, and you have an opportunity to come up to an event, go to PAX, because that's exactly what it's designed specifically for the gamer at heart, right? And that's one of the things I love about coming out here. It's just, you know, like you guys were saying, just seeing people we haven't seen in years in the hallways, having, you know, rekindling that friendship and those memories that you've had with them from the past, you know, whether it be, you know, face to face, person to person, or whether it was a social media experience that you had with them. So yeah, man. PAX, it's where it's at, and I love coming out here whenever I have the opportunity.
Ever, thanks for listening to episode 697. Guys, we're about to hit 700 in a few weeks.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, a couple more episodes, and it's on, man. Very excited about that, man. Now, until next time, just make sure to go to gamertagware.com or play.it/gamertag and listen to our past episodes. Make sure to share with your friends, family, everybody. And here's Paris taking a picture of us recording. Hey, there you go. So if you can go to Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, we're everywhere. Look us up, subscribe. If you can, maybe also post a review and share it, because we need your support. All right. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.